Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
For the first time in 32 years, the Los Angeles Dodgers are World Series champions. Welcome in to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, joined by Travis Anderson in the studio. And Travis, last night, the baseball season came to an end, and it was the Dodgers, the team that was best throughout the regular season, ended up being best in the postseason. Pretty historical run when you think about it.
Yeah, they've been the best team. You know, you probably make the case maybe the last 3 years they've been the best team, just ran into some bad luck with Houston, the Red Sox, and then last year, and then finally got it done this year. I mean, they were the best team all year. They only lost one series all year. That was to Colorado.
Right.
And then Atlanta had them on the ropes, but that's what good teams do. They find ways to, you know, fight back and win. That's what they did, and they deserved it. I mean, this has been a long time coming for Dodger fans. I mean, you know more than anybody, and they finally got it done, and you just got to be happy for, you know, you and your dad and my brother and every Dodger fan out there in the Dodgers organization.
Yeah, when you look at the players on this Dodger team, Clayton Kershaw, you got to be happy for him. He picks up two wins.
Greatest pitcher of our generation.
Yeah, look, Dodger fans, they know he's the greatest pitcher in franchise history. I think the only thing that was preventing Dodger fans from just flat out saying that was postseason struggles, no World Series championship.
I mean, it's not like he's been bad. He's 16-5 or so in the playoffs. Yeah, I mean, the guy's a stud, and people, you know, like to harp on it, and he's not had bad outings. But yeah, he finally got that, so people can, you know, be quiet about that now.
Justin Turner, been there for a long time. This is a guy that the Mets didn't want. Nobody wanted Justin Turner, you know. So you look at guys like Pedro Baez and Kenley Jansen. These are longtime Dodgers that have stuck it out.
Yeah, Kenley's a foundation guy.
He is a foundation guy. I mean, he may be towards the end now, but nonetheless, you have to be happy for this team. And look, the missing ingredient proved to be Mookie Betts.
Guy reminds me so much of Ricky Henderson.
Yeah, Ricky Henderson on steroids.
Yeah, I mean, Mookie Betts is a stud. I mean,
he flies when he's on the base paths. Here's the thing. Mookie does everything great.
Defensively, he's awesome. Hitting, getting on base. I mean, the Red Sox messed that up so badly, and, you know, that was the missing ingredient for the Dodgers.
Eighth inning last night, Mookie goes yard. Game's 2-1. Mookie hits a solo shot, and at that particular time, it just felt real. They're going to finally do it. The Mookie shot wasn't the go-ahead home run. You know, he had the go-ahead run at home plate, but the Mookie shot, you just got the sense, okay, this game's over.
Yeah, and I never felt like the Dodgers were going to lose last night. You text me, what do you think? I was like, they're fine. They're going to win. And I know it kind of looked bleak there, but I was never worried when they were down 3-1 to Atlanta, and I wasn't worried in this series, and I wasn't worried last night. They were going to get it done because they're the better team, and the better team's going to win.
I agree. I agree with that, okay? But when you look at the game last night, for one, I never thought the game was going to end 1-0. It wasn't going to end 1-0. One run was not going to be enough for Tampa. However, Kevin Cash makes a decision to pull Blake Snell after 5 1/3 scoreless innings and two hit baseball up 1-0.
70 pitches.
I don't know what Kevin Cash was doing last night. He said, quote, well, yeah, I regret the decision because it didn't work out. No, it wasn't. It wasn't smart. I mean, let's just be real. It was not smart. Look, if you're a Dodger fan, you're excited because finally there's a pitching gaffe that you cannot relate to your manager, Dave Roberts. But Travis, the wheels fell off after Kevin Cash decided to pull Blake Snell, arguably the best pitcher on the team. And he was throwing his best game, not of the series, but of the season.
Because he struggled a little bit.
World, yeah. What in the world is Kevin Cash thinking?
He wasn't. He relied so much on analytics and not his gut. And as a manager, you can overthink things. And Dave Roberts did the same thing a few years ago. You can overthink the situation and think, well, I got to get my guy out of there because we're getting to the lineup rolling over again for the third time, and I don't want him to go through it. But, yeah, that's one he messed up on. And if he looks back on it and could do have a do-over, he wouldn't do that.
Yeah, none of it made sense.
No.
None of it made sense. I mean, you leave him in to face Mookie, or you bring in another lefty for Mookie, right?
That's but what that you bullpen do. Was gassed. Tampa's bullpen was gassed.
That's fair,
that's
too.
Why you can't.
That's fair, too.
And, you know, you got to... Snell has to go at least seven innings, and or eight innings, but I think Tampa Bay's bullpen was gassed, dude.
Snell was not happy when he was removed from the game.
Yeah, he should have been mad.
And one of the things that I do believe we now can look at is you talk about the bullpen being gassed. I think it is important to look at Tampa Bay's route to the World Series. So they get by Toronto easy. That was very simple. We knew that was going to happen. But it's a 5-game set with the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 7-game set with the Astros. It's a 6-game set with the Dodgers. When you look at the Dodgers' route, it was a sweep over the Brewers. It was a sweep over the Padres. And it went 7 with Atlanta, and the Dodgers had to throw everything in the kitchen sink to get to the World Series. But I do believe that Tampa had a more difficult route to the World Series. The Dodgers cruised through the first two rounds. That wasn't the case for Tampa. And when you play in such a short period of time, and there's no travel days, and we had, what, 2 travel days in the World Series, but when you're playing that much baseball, you have to worry about the bullpen arms. And I agree with you. Tampa's bullpen was gassed.
Yeah, and for the Dodgers, they got what they needed out of Gosselin to start the game. Only gave up the 1 run. You survived that. Alex Wood comes in, does a fantastic job.
Yeah.
And you can't say enough about the other guys that, you know, pitched last night, including the kid that closed it out.
Now, I guess the one thing that you can say in defense of Kevin Cash is Blake Snell has now gone a major league longest 21 straight starts without completing 6 innings. That includes every outing this season, okay? So while it appears, and I agree, it was asinine to take him out last night. It was, and that's a decision that we're going to hear about. It's going to be up there with Grady Little. It's going to be up there with Dave Roberts pulling Rich Hill. You name it. I mean, it's going to be mentioned with the pitching gaps. When you look at what Tampa did all season long, it fit with what got them there. Snell never went longer than 6 innings. Never completed 6 innings.
No, and that's the style they went with, and they didn't change it because they're in Game 6 of the World Series. They kept with what got them to that point, and it didn't work out. Finally, it something went the Dodgers' way, you know, with a managerial decision.
Dodgers are World Series champions, and you better believe we're going to talk about this a little bit later on in the show. We're also going to talk some high school basketball coming up in just a few weeks. We're going to tip off the winter sports season. Emory's got a new general, a new head coach, Jeff Cincinnatus. He's going to join us in studio on the show today. We will catch up with a great friend of mine, Steve Bordstein. Look, I try to stay completely unbiased. I can't help it. I'm ecstatic today. The Dodgers are World Series champions. We will talk some Major League Baseball a little bit later on in the show. And we'll continue to just recap what was a crazy season all the way through and through. That's coming up when we return right here on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You watch the games. You follow the team. You wear the colors with pride. And you have questions. And only one man can answer them. Get the answers to the tough questions.
It's Football Tuesday here on Drive Time Sports. We'll talk NFL in just a moment, but for right now, we are going to focus on the local scene. This past Friday, final football game between Carbon and Emory in 2020. Emory falling on the road against the Grantsville Cowboys in the opening round of the state tournament. Final score there, 47-14, and you can get your complete game recap by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com. We're going to talk about that game. We're going to recap the 2020 season, which was a successful one for Emory. Joining us right now over the phone to do just that, we have head coach John Famalo. And coach, as always, it is a pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, I appreciate you having me on, Jordan.
Yeah, definitely, Coach. I know this isn't the interview that we wanted, wrapping things up for the 2020 season. I know that there was a lot of success. We'll talk about that in just a moment, but we'll start by talking about the Grantsville game. Coach, 47-14 is the final score. And really, I think when you go back and you look at it, this game was much closer, and it kind of had a vibe of the Richfield game, where the team was close offensively. They were able to press. The boys had a couple of efficient drives. They took some time off of the clock. They just couldn't punch it into the end zone. And you almost just got the vibe, like at any moment, this offense is going to get rolling. We're going to have a football game here, but Grantsville prevented that from happening.
Yeah, no, I thought Grantsville did a good job, you know, kind of bend and not break type of defense. Seems like every time we got close to that red zone, they would just, you know, make a play or get a stop that they needed. And, you know, we just couldn't, you know, put some points on the board like we needed to kind of keep the game close. But, you know, that's how I felt, you know, was it, I think they were up 3 scores close to that first quarter and into that second quarter, and we get on the board, and I felt like, okay, here we go. And just couldn't get over that hump, and you know, I thought, like you say, they just did a really good job stopping us when they needed to, and we don't just struggle making putting some points on the board.
Coach, if we go back to the first drive, it did end with an interception at the goal line. Close to 4 minutes have been taken off the clock. You know, that's exactly what this offense wants to do. You and I have talked about that. Roll off, you know, chunks of yardage, but take some clock. You know, kind of control tempo. And then there's the interception. How much did that specific drive change the game in your mind?
I think it's a big deal. I think if we score, you know, or get some points on the board, it gives the kids a little bit of confidence. And, you know, I just, you know, I think it's a big deal going up 7-0 on a good team like that. And so, you know, I think it swung the momentum their way and, you know, got them going. And, you know, from that point, we just never could rebound. But I say, would have been nice to see what happened if we would have got that score in. And, you know, but that's football. You don't always get the play that you need or get the play that you need to happen. And, you know, we needed to respond, and we struggled doing that on the defensive side as well. And so, you know, credit to Grantsville.
I don't think there's any doubt that this team, they never quit. And that was apparent from the broadcast booth. And I'm sure it was apparent from the sidelines as well. I mean, even late in the game when the mercy rule in the clock is rolling, this team never quit.
No, and that's, you know, I credit the kids. They always gave me 100%. And, you know, they never had quit in every single game we had. And so, you know, I'm grateful for the kids' the willingness to be able to, you know, put a 100%, even though maybe some situations weren't the best. And so, you know, that's the type of kids we have.
Coach, in this game, it's a career day for Jace Mangum. He has double-digit catches, goes over the 100-yard mark, and then you guys reward him with a 1-yard touchdown run at the goal line, and so really showcasing his versatility. We know you have a lot of skill position players that can do multiple things, but boy, I tell you, you're hard-pressed to find a better individual performance throughout the entire year than what Jace gave offensively in this game. He was coming down with some grabs, knowing he's going to get popped across the center of the field, and it didn't bother him.
No, he did a great job. You know, he's a stud. He's a kid that seems like every good team that we played this year, he made big catches and big plays that we needed to. And so, you know, he's just a competitor, and, you know, I look forward to next year and the things that he can do. But, you know, I thought he had a great year, and he's just a tough kid.
How much of the improvement, Coach, in your mind was due to maybe schematics, maybe looking at what you guys wanted to do logistically this year compared to growth and maturity from kids that have taken that step from that sophomore to junior or junior to senior level? I mean, what do you contribute to improving from 1 win to 5 wins?
Like you say, I think it's the maturity. Again, I think that's a lot of it. I think our leadership with our seniors was a big deal this year. We haven't always had that. And so we had some vocal leaders that, you know, have set some expectations on teammates. And as coaches, we've got some expectations. And so, you know, I felt like that was some of the keys. Schematically, I mean, you know, we changed things here and there. But for the most part, you know, I think football is a game about dudes. And so when you have some good players and some physical players, you know, good things will happen. And, you know, I felt like that was probably the biggest key for us, no matter what we try to do schematically.
Again, Coach John Fumalo with the Emory Spartans, our guest right now. And, Coach, as you talk about those kids that came back and played, a lot of these kids, they stuck it out from their freshman season all the way to their senior campaign. And so to see a team go from 1-9, a lot of what-ifs last season, to some small senior classes over the last couple of years, to have a big senior class, actually have a senior night that takes a little bit of time, right, that keeps the opposition on the sidelines for a moment, to see these kids win 5 games and have a chance for a region title. Me personally, I couldn't be more proud of those boys. I'm sure you can echo that sentiment. I mean, these kids, they worked for everything they got.
No, they have, you know, and they really put a lot of work in and a lot of dedication. And again, it wasn't easy for these kids, especially if they played as sophomores and got beat around, and even as freshmen. And so to be able to stick it out, see it all the way through, was a testament to these kids. Because I think I've had some senior classes two prior years that, those kids played as sophomores, and, those numbers dwindled as they got to seniors, the fact that they struggled and the physicality of the game and getting beat up every week. And so, I thought these seniors, they stuck it out because they understood, there was a light at the end of the tunnel, and, there was going to be some rewards. And, I think that having a 5-1 season, more wins they've had these last 2 or 3 years. And so combined, I think it's a credit to these kids, and they set the bar for, Emory football program for the younger kids coming on up.
Coach, what was the one moment this season that you can look back on and say, okay, we've turned the corner? I mean, was there one specific moment that you looked at that made that thought pop into your mind?
I think the ALA game, honestly, was one of those. Again, we'd lost 2 games in a row. Miller game we should have won, lost to a really good North St. Pete team at the time. And then, the ALA game, the way it started, thinking, oh, man, we're going to start the season 0-3. But I felt like the kids, they battled, and, they pulled out the win. And I felt like, okay, hey, we can do something special here. And one of the kids reeled off a few more wins in a row. And so I think that was probably the biggest turning point for me, is to see these kids, being down and being able to battle and overcome that, where in the past I've seen them get down and, just kind of, we'll just go through the motions and they just want to be competitive. And I felt like at that point the kids wanted to win, and they understood what it took to win, and that was probably the biggest game for us to see that happen.
And you noticed a chip on the shoulder, it seemed like, after that game. I mean, these kids played with a different kind of – energy, a different kind of swag.
No, I was. I mean, I think the kids went in each game thinking, hey, we got a chance to win. And, they felt like they had something to prove. I think Emory football, hadn't had a whole lot of success. And so to be able to get a few wins and to earn some respect to some other teams, I think that was a big deal to these kids, because they felt like, they felt like, hey, we're better than we are. And they felt like that, prior years, but just weren't able to get the outcomes. And I think this year we earned a lot of teams' respect.
Coach, looking ahead, I mentioned the senior class, and so you got to start looking out at underclassmen, the juniors and the sophomores. You and I were talking off the cuff. You feel very comfortable with where this team is heading moving into next year.
Yeah, no, I mean, we've got a pretty good junior group, probably a little bit about the same size, maybe a little bit bigger than this senior group that we have now. And a lot of these kids contributed on both sides of the ball, and so you may not saw some of these kids on the offensive side as far as offensive line, but they played a lot of defensive line, and we had a great JV season. I mean, I think we lost 1 game to JULAB, and we should have won that game. But these kids have played together. They've been able to build a bond and play together. That helps when they move to that next level. And I felt like that's kind of how this senior group has. They give these kids to be able to opportunity to play JV season, to mature, to get better, not get beat up on too much, and then hopefully can carry that to next year.
Yeah, we don't really ever talk about the JV or sophomore groups, Coach, when we preview the upcoming game, but yeah, a lot of success at all levels this year. I don't think that can be overstated.
No, and credit to our coaches and those kids. I think our freshmen, sophomore team went undefeated. And then again, we lost one game, that JV game to UAB, a really good UAB team. And so, you know, I think our program's kind of turning that point where we feel like the kids coming in and the kids moving throughout the program, we're continuing to keep, you know, decent numbers of groups, kids, to be able to build a program. And that's, you know, that was what I envisioned when I took the job, is, hey, we just got to get numbers and kind of get stability as we move these kids throughout the program, so that when you get to a senior year, that you got a pretty good pool of kids to pull from, and then, you know, you got a pretty good feeder program coming into it. So, you know, I'm grateful for, you know, these kids, because they love football. You know, I can't say that's always been said around Emory High, and so that's good to see, you know, kids wanting to participate in football.
Coach, I know that next year that could look different. I don't want to say drastically different, but everything could look different as far as the 3A classification in the region. Has there been any indication to you as to what type of changes we could be expecting as they realign once again?
It's hard to say. You know, I haven't got any indications what's going to happen. I know there's some schools that are probably going to move up, and, you know, whether they move out of our classification into the 4A, and then we pull some of the 2A into 3A, or 3A becomes back to two regions. You know, there's a lot of ways it could go that I can see, but, you know, hopefully we're going to probably be in the same, I'm assuming, a lot of the same situations and regions with numbers-wise, as far as Richfield and San Juan and a Grand and some of those teams. And so, you know, be interesting to see what happens, but they say the biggest thing we can control is getting our kids in the weight room and preparing them for, you know, a football season.
Now we can end with this, Coach. What do you do now? Now that the season's done, how do you spend your nights? I'm sure you probably feel a little lost not preparing for a game this weekend.
It is. I mean, as I say, my wife's happy to see me now and kind of out of the basement and kind of interacting with the family a bit more. But, you know, I'll probably take probably a month off, and then honestly, I'd like to get back into it and start, you know, studying. I mean, football is a game that, I mean, there's a lot to learn, and I'm still learning, and so that's what's kind of good about football. There's always something you can learn from some other coaches or what other clinics, and there's just a lot that you can continue to get better as a football coach, and not only X's and O's, culture-wise. I think that's one of the big things I worked on this past year that I felt like, you know, I need to get better at, is building a culture of these kids that they, you know, not only learning football, but learning to be good men.
Well, Coach, congratulations on a very successful 2020 season. It was so much fun to cover 5 wins this year. I appreciate you always taking out the time each week and before games to have a word with us. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, and I look forward to next season.
Hey, thanks, Jordan. Appreciate everything you've done for a program for these kids, spotlighting these kids, and good things that are happening with this program. So, you know, thank you very much.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, Coach. Thank you. We're going to break for just a moment. Again, it's Football Tuesday. We'll talk NFL Week 7 now in the books. We'll look ahead to Week 8. We'll also talk about some key points. One, the Dallas Cowboys. Should Mike McCarthy be a one and done? I think he should. Honestly, I think you can make a case for McCarthy being out in year one. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about, I guess, a coaching aspect. Todd Gurley reached the end zone instead of going down to the 1 yard line, even though he tried. Atlanta scored. They took the lead. Their defense couldn't stop Detroit. Is that the right call? Do you take the points or do you kneel and attempt the field goal? What's the right call? What's not the right call? We'll talk about that as well. It's right here on Drive Time Sports. We're back in just a moment.
Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAN. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
So now you open my eyes.
Here comes the quarterback, Burrow, looking for a block, and he got it up in the front by Hopkins into the end zone. Touchdown!
I feel like I'm gonna lose my way.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. Football Tuesday here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. We're going to step aside from the high school ranks, and we're going to talk NFL as Week 7 came to a close last night with the Rams and the Bears. We'll bring in Vinny Rondinelli as we do each Football Tuesday. And Vinny, I want to talk about the Dallas Cowboys, and I hate spending a ton of time on the NFC East because That's not good football. It's just not good football.
No, it's sad. Honestly, it's sad.
The New York Giants are 1-6. They get a win this week, and they may be tied in the win column for first place within that division. Think wow. about that.
And they're literally falling down. They're
yes.
running, they're running for the end zone with no one around them and just falling.
So when you look at the Cowboys, who are now down to their third-string quarterback because the hit that Andy Dalton took yesterday was just despicable. The hit that he took on Sunday was gross. So Andy Dalton leaves the game. I don't believe he's coming back anytime soon. And with that being said, you're down to your third-string quarterback. I get it. There are issues in Dallas. But should Mike McCarthy be on the hot seat after 1 year in Dallas? Yes or no?
No.
I got to disagree.
I know you do. No, a guy that's won a Super Bowl and been to playoff 7 years in a row, I believe it is, he didn't forget how to coach. Those aren't his guys. And McCarthy has to fight that. And, you know, I agree with Mike McCarthy yesterday in his tone that he was shocked that they have no life there. You know, and part of that's his fault, I get, but there's no life there. I mean, how many teams will let their quarterback get drilled like that and not even show any emotion? No lineman starting a fight.
There was one player that went over to Andy Dalton to help him up as he's laying
and Andy
on
Dalton's
the ground.
And Andy Dalton's a good guy.
Yes.
You're never going to hear a bad word about Andy Dalton in the NFL.
That's a problem.
That's a problem.
And that's a Mike McCarthy problem.
And that's part of his problem. But those aren't his guys.
They're not his guys, but he's never going to get his own guys. Like in Dallas, it's Jerry Jones's team. I don't care about the job titles. It's Jerry Jones's team. And so that's why that's not a viable argument to me. If you can't get his guys to buy in, you're not the coach
in
Dallas.
And that could be. And I think he's got a better chance of resigning than getting fired.
I agree.
He may just say, no, I don't want to do this anymore. Now, down, he's got some bad. And now let's say, and I believe they're, are they 2-5 or 2-4?
2-5.
Okay, they're 2-5. This is a team, if Dalton misses two games, you know, they split. Let's say they split. They're 3-6, Jordan, right?
Ooh, you're being generous if you think they're going to split.
Okay, say they split. You never know. It's the NFL.
Yeah, let's say, never know. Yeah, they get the Eagles, they get the Steelers. They could. Okay,
the Eagles are terrible.
Yeah, they could.
You win. You go on a four-win streak here. Dalton comes back healthy. The offensive line gets healthier, right? You win. You go on a three-game streak. You're in the playoffs. And at that point, you're healthier. And I'll tell you the biggest problem in my eyes there isn't McCarthy. It's Mike Nolan, which is surprising. He's always done well defensively. Their defense is terrible. But there's some talent there. So, I mean, this is a team, literally, Jordan, if they put it together, they go on a three-game win streak, they probably win a division. And then they're hosting a playoff game in Jerry's world.
But does it matter if you're 6-10 and you go to the playoffs?
What if you win?
Yeah, we've seen it before. We saw a 7-9 team in Seattle beat New Orleans. We've seen it before.
Now, the talent's there. Let's not forget. They have some talent on that roster.
They do have talent.
They do have talent on that roster. So it's not inconceivable to think this team turns it on. And they're pretty good in the playoffs. Dalton's a pretty good player. I'll tell you, the biggest disappointment for me besides Mike Nolan is Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah, well, look, if you have problems with chemistry, Ezekiel Elliott is not the guy that's going to mend that bridge with chemistry on the roster and the coaching staff. He's just not that guy.
No, he's not. And you're really in a bad spot now because you paid him a lot of money and you've found out that he's not helping you.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be completely honest. The guy has a ton of talent. He's not helping you.
No. No, I will tell you, though, what is alarming to me with the Cowboys and this current coaching staff, because you bring up Nolan, and the problem here is it's not as if he has created some sort of bizarre analytical defense that these guys should not be picking up.
No, he's had success in
he's
the NFL
everywhere
he's went.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's a chemistry problem with guys that aren't yours. So McCarthy's fighting that. His best player is not playing. His offensive line is riddled with injuries. So there's a lot going against him at this point. But it's hard for me to believe one and done. You know, I've seen Jerry stick with Chan Gailey. It was a mess. Dave Campo, we saw that
for
disaster.
For a couple of years, yeah.
Barry Switzer ran that team into the ground.
Yeah.
So, one and done seems a little bit too much for me.
Even when Dak was healthy, they should have lost to the Falcons.
Yeah.
Should have lost to Atlanta. Their only win, scoring. Yeah.
Let's be honest.
They scored, they were scoring 40 points a game.
The offense was not the problem.
It was Nolan's defense. That was the problem. Here's the thing that I believe. I think this is factual in the NFL. Obviously, the scrutiny, it's different in Dallas than it is anywhere else.
Right.
Right. But I also don't believe there's nothing wrong with saying you were wrong in hiring Mike McCarthy. And I do believe at this point in time, it is fair to say you hired Jason Garrett's clone.
You might be right.
I really believe that.
Well, Jason Garrett never had the success Mike McCarthy had either.
Yeah, Jason Garrett never had Aaron Rodgers, who's one of the top three greatest quarterbacks to ever play.
That's another great point.
And I can use, and one player does not make a team. I get this. But I can also use the argument to say, well, Mike McCarthy maybe underachieved a little bit when he was in Green Bay. I think he underachieved.
Yeah.
I think they underachieved. They got to the postseason. You can get to the dance, but you got to stay past 10 o'clock, right? And that was the problem.
It was a problem. Yeah, that's a great point, Jordan. And you may have hit this one on the head. For me, I just, knowing Jerry, I just don't think he admits he's wrong. I think 1 year's too soon for him to admit he's wrong.
Would it be wrong for Jerry to say, I'm wrong, we got to go in a different direction? Would it be wrong?
No.
Okay.
At this point, no.
Okay.
No. I don't think he'd do it. I think you're right and everything you've said. I think you're dead on. But I just have a hard time believing 1 year's all he gets.
We've seen one and done coaches, but it is different. Like, it's different in Arizona, right? Wilkes gets 1 year, he's out. It's different.
Yeah.
This is Dallas.
Yeah, this is Dallas.
The scrutiny around it is going to be, the PR around it is going to be horrible, right? And it is just different. However, the league is changing. And I'm blown away right now with what Arizona's done. I would have never guessed Arizona would be 5-2.
That crow tastes a little bit, tastes bad. I was dead wrong.
I was not buying it.
No,
I was not buying the Cardinals. I wasn't buying Cliff Kingsbury.
Nope.
Looks the part, good-looking dude, innovative, right? I understand what direction you're rolling here.
Kyler Murray, I didn't buy that hype.
You were never on board with Kyler Murray. No.
I'm eating a little crow right
working.
Now.
Yeah, it's working.
Yeah, it is.
It is proof that the league is changing.
It is.
It's proof. And I do believe that if you're Jerry Jones, this is where the decision comes in at the end of the season. This is my take on it. You have to look at Dak Prescott coming off of a devastating injury.
Right.
You have one more year of Dak before you have to pay him. Right? You get one more year. Tag him again. Tag him one more time. If you so choose.
You know, I think they get a deal done.
But they could tag him one more time, correct?
Right, they could. Okay. Yes, they can tag him one more time. I think they get a deal done.
I hope.
While he's on the crutches.
I hope. I hope they do. But let's say Dallas decides, look, we're going to tag you one more time. It's a monumental payday for Dak Prescott if they tag him one more time.
Mm-hmm.
But you could swallow that for 1 year opposed to being stuck in a situation like Atlanta is with Matt Ryan where he's untradeable. So, if they go that route, I understand it. Jerry Jones has to sit down at the end of the day, and you have to determine, is Mike McCarthy the right coach for this quarterback coming off a devastating injury that we are going to pay a boatload of money, be it for 1 year or be it for 5 years, you're going to pay Dak Prescott. And if your answer is not 100% yes, this is the guy, you have to move on because you don't have time anymore.
Well, let me ask you this. Was Dak Prescott playing the best football of his career?
Yes, he was. But you weren't winning games.
Correct. Now, if he's playing the best football of his career, if your quarterback's playing that well, if your defense plays middle of the road, they're 5-2.
Fair enough. Fair enough. These are bad losses, though. I mean, 38-31 to the Seahawks on the road. You could swallow that. That game was never really in doubt from what I remember of it.
Seahawks are good, very good football team.
It's a good football team. Cleveland losing, giving up 50 to Cleveland. It's a bad look.
Bad look.
You know,
and you're scoring. You're scoring. You're ahead. He was ahead in that game.
You're scoring. You're scoring points. But when I looked at Dak's numbers, and this probably just furthers your take on this, but when I look at Dak's numbers, I'm going to use a fantasy football reference here. You don't always draft the best quarterback. You draft the quarterback that gets the most opportunity to throw for yardage and touchdowns. Dak's numbers were inflated in my mind because you're giving up 40 points a game, which is creating 2 to 3 additional possessions.
That is correct.
Compared to typical quarterbacks like a Lamar Jackson.
Correct. Yeah, that's a very good point. Now, if your defense is playing middle of the road, Zeke's running the ball better and Zach don't have to throw it as much. And if he's playing that well, when he's picking his spots and he throws them when he wants to, how good could that offense be?
Yeah. With a healthy offensive
line. I agree with everything you said, though. I mean, it could be one and done. Let's just say this. Would either of us be shocked?
No.
Absolutely not.
No.
Would either of us argue for McCarthy and say, well, come on, bud. You know, you're going to say, well, hey, dude, you were bad.
Yeah, they're
say,
bad.
He doesn't have a leg to stand on. No. If he does get fired, he can't go up in front of anybody and say, I should still be here. And they were awful. But it's bottom line business. You're right. Bottom line business. What have you done for me lately?
And there is a lot of money about to come on the books in Dallas, which means if you're going to admit you're wrong, you better admit you're wrong now. Because if Mike McCarthy's not the right guy for this gig, and I don't believe he is, it's a monumental disaster moving forward 4 or 5 years from now.
Yeah.
This hire with where this team is at right now, they're not getting any younger, Vinny.
No.
They're not getting any younger. Their
window
is closing.
They got to rebuild an offensive line now.
Yeah.
They got to rebuild it. They got problems.
So are you rolling with Mike McCarthy for the next 5 to 10 years?
Ooh, no, not 5 to 10 years. I would have probably said year two. I want to see significant jump. But again, it's obvious Mike McCarthy made a bad hire, Mike Nolan, because he's not reaching that team.
It's not working.
They're not even on the same universe. They're not even the same universe up defense.
No, and I can point to one specific player. Jalen Smith is not the Jalen Smith that we have seen over the last 2 seasons.
No. He's one of the best linebackers in the NFL, and he looks like he's just lost.
Yeah.
That's bad.
There's problems in Dallas.
There's real problems in Dallas.
This was a team that was pegged to compete for a Super Bowl, and now?
We've had this discussion, though. Who's the real problem in Dallas? Owns a team.
It's Jerry Jones.
That's right. It's his team, so he can be the problem. But he is the problem.
So it's not Mike McCarthy?
No.
It's Jerry Jones.
That's Jerry Jones.
Dallas Cowboys, you have a monumental problem. You got problems. Let's just put it that way. Let's take a quick commercial break. We'll be back one more segment coming up here on Football Tuesday when we return on Drive Time Sports.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Beagles.
Football Tuesday continues here on Drive Time Sports. We'll let Vinny Rondinelli play the role of a coach. That's a familiar position for you.
Yeah. Coach one football. I miss.
Yeah, you know a thing or two. Let's talk about the Detroit Lions and the Atlanta Falcons. First off, if you're a Falcon fan, God bless you. You find ways, intriguing ways, to lose games.
I know your pain.
I
know your pain.
Here's the new way for the Falcons to lose a game. Score. That's the new way for the Falcons to lose a game. Yesterday, fourth quarter, Falcons, Lions, Atlanta trailing in this contest. Todd Gurley wants to fall down at the goal line, tries, breaks a tackle, has a 10-yard touchdown run because when he dropped down to the ground, the ball just happened to hit the goal line. Touchdown Atlanta, they go for two. They get it no problem, right? Atlanta's up in this contest. What was the score? 22-16 is the score at that particular time.
Yeah.
Detroit with Matt Stafford, please leave this guy alone. He's a tremendous quarterback. 25-36, 340 yards and a touchdown, leads him down the field. They score. They kick the extra point. They win the game. Detroit 23, Atlanta 22. The big narrative, the story yesterday was, should Todd Gurley have went down to the ground? Well, for one, he tried. It just didn't work. He made a tremendous play. Two, Vinny, they were losing. And Detroit gave Atlanta the lead, which, look, it worked for Indiana-Penn State on Saturday. Indiana allowed Penn State to score so they get the ball back. Takes a lot of guts to do that. It takes a lot of guts when you are leading to allow the opposition to score in order to get the ball back and take it the length of the field. It's even bigger cojones for you to not take the points and fall down to the ground. Seriously.
Yeah, this is a tough. You know, one thing that nobody was really talking about, and, you know, like we talked about off the air, you've seen it live and in color right in front of you, Gurley fell down to end a game one time. He had an easy touchdown, he fell down. Why? They were winning. So you take the knee, game's over. This is different. You're Atlanta. Now, you're going to tell me after all the things Atlanta's been through, let's talk about what's happened to them this year. If Gurley falls down at the 1 yard line with, I believe there's 54 seconds, real close. Okay.
Yep.
If he falls down at the 1 yard line with 54 seconds, does anybody have confidence they're going to get it in anyways?
Or kick a field goal?
I mean, what's that going to do? Tie it anyways?
I was going to do a tie if you kicked the field goal. I believe it was 16-13, correct? It's 16-13.
It was 16-14.
16-14.
Yeah, so field goal wins it 17-16.
You still... Yeah, it's tough. It's hard to tell a grown man that's worked all that way, he gets to the goal line not to score.
When you're losing.
Especially when you're losing. Yeah, that has to be mentioned. Another thing that has to be mentioned is, you know, a 53-man roster, Jordan, how many of those guys have the wherewithal to even know to fall down at the one-yard line? Four or five of them?
Gurley's one of them.
Maybe. Four or five.
He tried.
And I don't agree with that either. He should score, because if you're up 7 points and they got 50 seconds to go all the way down and get a touchdown, you should stop them.
Yeah, defensively,
Atlanta, you should not give up a touchdown.
Yeah, Atlanta were let down by Todd Gurley. Okay. Raheem Morris, who it looks to me like Atlanta played a little bit tougher for Morris than they did with Dan Quinn.
Dan Quinn had leads.
He did have leads.
I mean, the team looked the same to me.
Did it look the same to you?
Yeah.
I thought they had a little bit more fire. I think they looked more comfortable, but they still collapsed. They still collapsed, and that's the thing. I mean, you allowed Detroit to go down the field. You allowed Matt Stafford to put together an incredible drive. Todd Gurley gave you the lead with 50 seconds to play in the game,
and they had to score a touchdown,
not a field goal.
Yeah, they had to go 80 yards to score a touchdown.
So this, to me, I can relate this to basketball. If you talk to 10 coaches, you would get 5 different answers. If you're up 3 with 10 seconds to play in the game, do you foul and put the team on the line and prevent them from shooting a 3-point shot to send the game into overtime? A lot of coaches will, and I guess the situation does depend, but there are coaches that will say, no, I'd rather my defense play it out and get a stop. We win the game. There are some that say, no, I'm going to get in a free throw contest with you. You're going to shoot foul shots. You're not getting 3. Then comes the question, okay, you hit the first, you miss the second, you get the rebound, you kick it out for a 3, you lose the game. I've seen it happen.
Yeah, I've seen it happen.
It's happened, right?
It's happened.
It's the same conversation in the NFL. Todd Gurley had a clear path to the end zone.
That should have been a winning touchdown.
Go-ahead touchdown.
Yeah, it should have been a go-ahead score, yes.
Okay. You're willing to not put points on the board? A lot can go wrong special teams-wise. You can have a bad snap. You can have a bad hold.
And they're the Falcons. This year.
They're 1-5 at that time.
Your mojo's not right. So if he falls down at the 1 yard line, you got to still get points with 50 seconds left. Who's to say you don't fumble? Who's to say Gurley gets stuffed twice and you got to rush a field goal kicker on? There's so much that could go wrong there. It's easier for him to score and you hold them 80 yards away from a touchdown than it is for him to fall down, run the clock out, and just maybe kick it in for the win. You had a clear chance for a go-ahead score. I think you have to take that.
Yeah, and then
Raheem Morris, let's be honest. Raheem Morris is a defensive back coach.
Yeah.
He is a defensive guy.
And you know what's coming.
And he just told his defense, hey, you're my guys. I'm the interim head coach. I was the defensive coach on all these blown leads, and he's still the interim coach. They got to go 80 yards, guys, or 75 yards in 50 seconds. After the kickoff, 45 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Hold them.
That's it. You've given up 16
points
all game long.
Force them inside. Three completions here for 10 yards apiece. Don't worry about it.
And you have to give up a touchdown.
And a touchdown.
And at that point in time of the game, you had given up one touchdown over the course of
the entire game.
3 quarters and 14 minutes and 50 seconds.
Yes.
You had given up one touchdown.
And then you let him go right down the field and score.
I just don't think it's fair to blame this on Todd Gurley.
No.
I don't believe that Raheem Morris told him to go down to the ground. I think Gurley had the... we've seen him do it many times.
Yeah, you've seen him do it before.
Yes. So he's a smart player. But to look back on this and say, well, Todd Gurley's the reason they didn't win. No. Defensively. You lost that football
game. He had a go-ahead score, and with 50 seconds, you just had to make one stop.
How many coaches in the NFL, 32 coaches, it's tough to win in the NFL, right?
Brutal.
How many coaches out of the 32, if you walked up to them before a game and you said, you just put the go-ahead touchdown in the end zone with 50 seconds to play in the game?
You're up 6.
You got to kick off to the opposing team. You going to go for it? Would you take that?
Yeah, 32 of them are going to say yes.
32 would say yes.
Yeah, we'll take that.
There's not a single coach that would say no to that.
Yeah, they're saying, we'll take that. We'll take them odds.
You can't blame Gurley for this.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes the mojo is wrong. And mojo is huge in football. And people, I don't know what mojo is. That's a term coaches use, players. You know what I'm talking about, Jordan. Momentum, mojo. And sometimes it's off. And it could be due to injuries or change. This year, no training camp. Whatever it is.
things don't go your way. And when, you know, that starts to roll, it can compound itself. And for the Falcons this year, literally, we could change three plays for the Falcons this year, four plays, and they're 5-1 or 5-2.
Yeah, isn't that something?
Just change, you know, an onside kick.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, how about Julio Jones with an easy touchdown? He's Julio Jones going to Hall of Fame. He drops an easy touchdown?
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so many bad things have happened to Atlanta. And sometimes it just it compounds on yourself, and it just kind of rolls downhill. And I don't know. I don't know how you break it. A lot of coaches are looking for it. Maybe sometimes a call goes your way, or, you know, if they sack Stafford and they get that win, maybe it changes. One win can change a season. We've seen that happen thousands of times.
It started to last year for this team. They beat New Orleans, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and they went six out of last seven.
Yeah. So one win can definitely change a lot. There is talent on this team. I guess this is what it brings me to next. When you look at the playoff picture, even with the extended playoff picture, you're done if you're Atlanta. You're not getting in.
Yeah,
you're now 1-6. And when I watch Julio Jones play again, you mentioned it, he's a Hall of Famer. This guy's given it his all yesterday, dealing with a hamstring injury.
Yeah, he's not right.
He's going in between plays and being stretched out by the trainer on the sideline in between plays and then running back out. Do you consider trading Julio Jones if you're the Atlanta Falcons
Absolutely.
At the deadline?
Absolutely.
You consider it?
Yes. Yes, if you can rebuild your team with capital, yes. You're not going anywhere this year. He's aging. Give him a chance. Ridley's played outstanding. Why not? If you can get some capital back, you got to rebuild your team.
Yeah.
You have got to rebuild your team. And you're going to have a new coach. You're going to have a new general manager. How much better is it if you have more capital to attract him to that job?
It's a tough pill to swallow because you are giving up the greatest receiver in your franchise history. That's fair, right?
No, absolutely.
Can you think of a better receiver in Falcons history? Okay, so you're giving up the best wide receiver in your franchise's history. And that's a tough pill to swallow. I mean, it is. However, you know, I'm a firm believer that if in the NFL, you want to be in one of two places. You want to be great or you want to be bad.
You're right.
I'm a firm believer on it.
Yeah, you're right, because middle of the pack is garbage.
It is.
You're not doing yourself any favors. If you're the Falcons, if I was the Falcons, I'm Raheem Morris, I'm 1-6, and your mojo's would empty your bench. Rotate those guys in. Get your young players some experience. A lot of these veterans are going to be there next year anyways. You're probably not going to be there next year anyways.
Raheem Morris will not be back next year, no.
Empty your bench. Get those young guys some reps. Try and rebuild that culture. If you can get some capital, if they're calling and offering you picks for whatever you got, if you can make it work financially, do it. Start your rebuild. Start it.
We know the worst situation in the NFL right now is in New York with the Jets. No question, right?
No question.
Okay. If you combine the two New York records, they're 1-13 on the season right now between the Jets and the Giants. So let's throw the Jets aside. Worst situation in the NFL. Bengals are 1-5. They got something cooking as far as Joe.
They're competitive.
Joe Burrow.
Yep.
Yep. They're competitive. 1-6 squads. Texans, Jaguars, Giants, Vikings are 1-5. You got the Falcons at 1-6. Worst situation out of those teams I just mentioned is.
Oof. The Vikings have capital. They've traded. They got capital. The Jacksonville has tons of capital and cap room. I'm going to say Houston.
I want to say Houston, although you have Deshaun Watson at quarterback, so you got a great starting point, but you don't have draft capital.
You don't have draft capital. You don't have money.
You don't have money. David Johnson's deal does come off the books, if I'm not mistaken.
I think it's taking another year on it.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, maybe it is Houston.
Yeah, I think it's Houston.
It's got to be Houston or Minnesota.
Minnesota has a ton of young talent right now. They had two first-rounders who are both playing well right now.
Yeah, you did get
They've
some
had
capital
some
out of the Diggs trade. Yeah.
And they got some capital going forward. I think that there's some other teams worse off than Minnesota.
You think so?
Yes, I do.
Well, you're going to be looking for a new head coach. You're going to be looking for a new quarterback. See, that's one thing that Houston has. They have a quarterback. It's tough
they
to
do.
Find.
That's a great point.
It's
that's a great point. Jacksonville, I don't think, you know, you watched Minshew yesterday. He was running for his life. The whole game he's running for his life. I think he's a gamer, and the team likes him. So I don't know if that's their biggest need. But they have, I think, five out of the first 50 picks.
Jacksonville's in fine shape. If you're
And they have a good owner who's willing to spend
money. Yes.
And you're going to get a new head coach and general manager. So that's a team on the rebuild that can come up fast.
I'm going to tell you that if you're a coach looking for your first job, or if you're a general manager that loves to have control, you love to have options, there's not a better situation than Jacksonville this offseason.
Yeah,
there's not going to be
you.
A better situation.
I agree with you.
Just based off of what they have. Atlanta, look, I can flip this. Talking about the Texans, they have their quarterback. I don't think Atlanta has a quarterback of the future. They got a quarterback that's wrapping up a lot of money for the next 3 years that's almost untradeable. You and I were going over
that. Absolutely.
Last
yeah,
week.
You can't get rid of him. It's, but he's playing good football.
He's playing good
Matty
football.
Matty Ice is playing good
but
football.
But you're still 1-6.
Correct.
And he's not getting any younger. And you can't move on from him.
No, you can't. You're stuck with him.
That's a tough situation.
That
in
is a tough situation. It maybe buys you a year of drafting a quarterback. Maybe this year you work on another weakness. Then the year after, draft the quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to get the 5-year window with the quarterback and the cheap contract. So maybe it buys you a year. So your next pick would be somebody. You know, for Atlanta, though, I think the biggest need is the edge. Let's be honest, Jordan. When's the last time Beasley, I think 4 years ago, had some sacks? When's the last time Atlanta rushed a passer?
They tried this year with Dante Fowler. They tried. It just hasn't worked.
Yeah.
It hasn't worked.
If you got a pass rush, you win the game when they have to go for a touchdown in 50 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. That's an interesting point, interesting question. I think if you're Gurley, you got to score. And I think that Houston's the worst job right now.
Out of time of this edition of Football Tuesday. Vinny, it's always fun. I know we'll do it again next week.
Love it.
All right. Do not forget Thursday Night Football. It's going to make its return. We got a dandy for you this week, an NFC South battle between the Panthers and the Falcons. Yeah, we'll get the
with McCaffrey.
McCaffrey should be back this Thursday.
Should be back.
That's something to look forward to. We'll see you tomorrow. Be safe. We are out.